Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Rain this week is keeping farmers out of the fields, and America and the world needs more corn and soybeans than ever. What does this mean for the Marion County farmer? And how does the increasing national debt tie in? Let's go in depth with Ray Jenkins with Cargill Eddyville from Melcher Dallas. Well, as we're doing this interview, Ray, it's raining outside, and I bet there's some farmers wishing it would stop.
Well, absolutely. Our early April weather was very good. Ground dried out, was getting fit to plant. And, in fact, some folks did plant some corn the week of April 11th. We estimate 25 to 50,000 acres of corn were planted within 50 miles of our plant here in Eddyville. And, yes, it's raining hard, and the prospect for pretty wet conditions to be with us for another 1 to 2 weeks.
Well, and what are the implications then for the farmers and for Cargill?
Well, the big challenge is that last year we were able to get the crop planted actually a little bit early, and that's always viewed as a plus in the industry. And now it looks like we'll be barely able to stay on track. In fact, some people are projecting right now that U.S. planting numbers on the 1st of May will likely be only about 20%, which will be lagging behind. Our big concern is when we can get this new crop corn planted, and that means when can we get it harvested, and how tight is the corn supply going to be in the month of September this year.
Well, and if we keep pushing corn planting into May, we hit a point where people are going to switch to soybeans, aren't they?
Well, they certainly can do that. The price ratios of corn to soybeans are heavily favoring corn right now. So I think most people are going to stay with corn up into the 15th or 20th of May this year.
And is there increasing risk for planting corn after that, where people will have to shift?
Once you get past the middle of May, you start getting some yield losses on corn on a daily basis of 1 to 2 bushels per acre. So at some point, people will say, hey, I'm going to go ahead and plant these soybeans. They can make a full crop, and I'm not going to take the risk on the corn.
Okay, but it's too early to tell what people are going to do now.
Oh, absolutely. It's just nervous time, because we'd all like to be out getting this crop in the field. The crop prospect via price is obviously fantastic. You know, we've got bids at $6 to $6.50 for new crop corn, so tremendous opportunity. We just need to grow the crop.
And the USDA report came out a month or so ago projecting that we were going to plant more corn acres, but still not enough corn acres. Is that right?
The range of estimates of 92 was met, but obviously to meet that number, you've got to get a crop in the ground. And this year, the prospect was for additional acres up in the Dakotas and northern Minnesota. And that's an area that today is actually probably in storm warnings and snow up there. So it's going to take quite a while for that ground to be fit to plant up there this year. And that could lead to fewer corn acres and more soybean acres, at least in that part of the United States.
Well, and it might be my imagination, but I bet you know that I'm seeing a lot of ground that used to be hay or that used to be CRP that's being plowed this year.
Well, we're in a part of the state from about Highway 92 south that has the bulk of the CRP acres in the state. We've got individual counties down here that at one time had 60 to 70,000 acres of CRP in each county. And as some of those contracts have expired, people have chosen to bring that ground back in production. A lot of it continues in the CRP program. But we have CRP acres. We also have some pasture ground. Got to remember, we've got a declining cattle business in the United States. Fewer numbers there. So people are taking some of this bluegrass pasture, spraying Roundup on it, and going to plant soybeans in there this year.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Ray Jenkins with Cargill Eddyville. You mentioned the cattle industry, so people are taking a hit in the cattle industry locally, or is it not as big of a deal?
Well, profits are pretty good in the cattle industry right now. It's just that those folks endured a lot of lack of profitability for several years. And when you look at the demographics of the people that own the small cattle herds, those people tend to be in the upper age groups. And when they decide to depopulate their herds, there generally isn't someone there to take that position on.
Is it a concern to Cargill about more and more land going to corn and being pulled out of CRP or not being entered into CRP because of the need for corn, but perhaps there's going to be a long-term downside with respect to erosion or water quality? Is that something that you think about?
Well, certainly when we talk about ground in South Central Iowa, and a lot of our ground here is classified as highly erodible. And what that really means is that we have to pay a lot of attention to how we grow those crops. And that means a lot of no-till and maybe a little more corn in the rotation that actually builds up the organic matter and provides better ground cover than planting a strict corn and soybean rotation in this part of the state.
Ultimately, you have to be concerned about the long-term viability of the land around here, and so if erosion becomes a problem for short-term productivity gains, that doesn't help you in the long run.
No. I mean, you know, you hear a lot of talk about sustainable production and being able to keep doing the same things year after year. So you have to have a balance, and certainly some parts of the state are conducive to continuous row crop production. Some are better fitted for long-term rotations, including pasture or hay ground. But to make that work, you have to have profitability for the cattle industry, and that's something that's been lacking here until recently, and it's only because of two things. First, the cattle herd shrank over the course of several years. The second thing right now is that we have an incredibly strong export demand for meat products, both beef, pork, chicken, all of those things into Asia and other parts of the world that are supporting livestock prices.
And for the corn, you want as much corn as you can possibly get, but you want it for many, many years.
Well, that's true. This is a very large facility. We use the same amount of corn every year. So we're looking, obviously, for a large pool of supply to draw from, but we also understand to have that supply of corn, that folks have to be able to take care of the land they're growing it on.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Ray Jenkins with Cargill Eddyville. So you do the same amount of corn every year. What happens if you don't have enough corn?
then we have to increase the area from which we source corn. If you go back to a pretty famous year in the corn history, which was 1996, the industry literally ran out of corn in August that year. And we had to source corn from 300 to 350 miles away in southeast Kansas, where they were harvesting new crop corn at the end of August and early September.
Are you worried about that this year?
Well, it hasn't kept me up at night, but we've been aggressive in covering our forward positions. We're in great shape through August, and right now we're kind of analyzing the September situation and trying to determine how much of our supply can come from local new crop production, or what are we going to have to do to make that transition.
And what happens if there's too much corn? Is that even a remote possibility?
Not really, especially in a year like this. You'll moderate your basis bids and the flow of corn. In situations like we're facing right now, you rarely overbuy a position. You just try to eke by till the new crop harvest is there.
So that's sort of a balance between getting too much, too little. It's the farmer has to hit it right on to make their economic needs met, and then you need it for your production needs as well.
Right. You know, and there's a lot of users of corn besides Cargill in this area. We have a lot of feed mills. We have a lot of pork production. We have some cattle feeding. So everybody is a user of corn. And there's also other processing plants east of here that draw corn not far from this area. So, you know, the challenge in a year like this, like I said, is to have enough corn to make it to new crop, but make sure you do have a supply, and that can be a real challenge.
And what's happening on the world stage that we might not know about that would be impacting prices here for the farmer?
Well, one of the big issues right now is the value of the dollar, which has been fluctuating pretty wildly. In general, the dollar has been losing value. That's generally positive to the value of United States commodities in the export market. But one of the things that's really reared its head in the last week is all this discussion about the size of our national debt. And all of those things can have pretty dramatic effects, both on the price of the dollar and on the general economic situation as well. It appears that GDP may be slowing a little bit, and whether or not that's just a United States phenomenon or carries over to the rest of the world, that can reduce the demand in commodities like it did in 2008.
Well, the Standard and Poor Index sort of fired a cannonball across the bow of our ship this morning, didn't they?
Well, absolutely. You know, you hear this phrase, kicking the can down the road, and we've been doing that for years and decades. And I do believe that we're pretty close to starting to take a lot more serious look at the economic state of the United States. And I also think that over time that it's going to get more difficult to finance our deficits if we don't start making some tough choices.
For me, anyway, it's sort of hard to figure out what that means for us locally, that deficit and pulling back and not spending so much with respect to the farming community. Can you explain how that deficit, increasing deficit, impacts Cargill and perhaps the local farmers?
Well, agriculture in general is a huge user of capital. We're very fortunate right now that agriculture in general is enjoying a profitable phase here. So there's less demand for farm loans. But eventually that will change, and the cost of inputs, cost of machinery, everything is going up. And at some point, people are going to have to start borrowing more money. Now, if we are in a situation with a deficit, and people want more money to loan us value. That's going to bleed all the way through the economic chain. So what it's really going to mean is that a local farmer wanting to buy a new piece of equipment and needing to finance that with a bank or another institution is going to find that the cost of borrowing that money is going to be higher. So his cost of business is going to increase over time.
Well, you and I are old enough to remember when interest rates were very high. If I'm remembering right, I'm remembering 15-16% for loans. And there's a lot of people that don't remember what those times were like.
Right. I often tell people that the 1970s, which was a period of very strong inflation and eventually high interest rates, that you won't be able to really understand inflation until you live it and go through with it. You can read the textbooks, you can talk about it all you want, but until you live it and it becomes pervasive in your actions each day. I can remember in the 1970s, people buying tractors, paying more than list price for tractors because they knew that in 6 months the tractor was going to be another 5 or 10% higher, so why postpone it? And then you get into this scenario of what I call galloping inflation, where it just starts to feed on itself. It's higher tomorrow than it is today, and that's what people expect, and it just forces people to buy today and create even more demand.
Well, and I remember, it seems like anyway, every time you would go to the grocery store, prices would have gone up.
And people are starting to pay attention to that. I have a daughter that works in an institutional food setting in a hospital in Dubuque, and they're already starting to be bombarded from their suppliers about price increases coming in the next months and the year ahead.
Okay, so from your perspective, the perspective of Cargill, and for what you think is good for the Marion County farmer, we need to pull back on that debt.
Well, I think as a country, it behooves us to get our house in order. We're financing this debt at relatively low interest rates. And at some point, that is going to stop. And then all of a sudden, as a country, we're going to find out we're going to be spending $1 trillion a year more to finance that debt. And then we're going to find ourselves in an unsustainable position. So that's going to hurt everybody in the long run.
Okay, so what you've just done then for me is to show how that national debt can play itself out locally and the impacts on our local economy.
Right. It's always easy to think that debt is someplace else, somebody else's problem, but in the end, it does affect each one of us in our daily lives.
Thanks to Ray Jenkins for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.